Hey there, everybody. I'm Aaron Hanchy, host of the Unknown Mining Podcast, and I'm here today with Lawrence Rolston, president and CEO of Mountain Boy Minerals. Lawrence is a geologist who's been in the exploration mining industry for more than 40 years, and he's currently working on projects in the Golden Triangle, where he's hunting for the buried treasure and searching for the unknown. Welcome to the podcast, Lawrence.
Great to be here, Aaron. And look, I think it's a tremendous idea for Spotlight to reach out and look for some of these lesser known, lesser covered topics.
Yeah, that's been one of the fun parts of this and getting to explore some of the things in mining that you don't learn at an investment conference, you don't learn at school. For me, particularly as a young professional, this is one of the most important things, being able to talk to people like you and other mining professionals who are actually in the field and working to, well, explore the unknown. And with that, I guess I can go ahead and ask you directly, what's something that you didn't know? What's something that was unknown to you about the mining industry and that you feel that somebody like me, who doesn't know it, should learn about?
Well, the thing that I've learned just recently and really struck was Newcrest getting involved in the Golden Triangle. And of course, everybody knows that. 2 years ago, they bought control of Red Chris. And people wondered why Newcrest was buying a small copper mine in a far off place. And now they've just concluded a $3 billion takeover of Pretium to get their hands on the Brucejack mine. And so I was curious, you know, what is it about Newcrest that makes them so much more interested in the Golden Triangle? All the majors are invested in the Golden Triangle. They're getting involved, they're dipping their toes in, but Newcrest has made a big push into it. So for me, the revelation came when I looked into their Cadia operation. You know, it's located in Eastern Australia, a geological area known as the Lachlan Fold Belt. And so they produced 765,000 ounces of gold in the 2021 fiscal year. And from an underground mine with a grade of 0.95 grams per ton gold. So anybody generally familiar with the mining industry would look at a underground mine with less than 1 gram per ton average grade and wonder, how are they going to make money at that? Well, they made $1.8 billion US dollars of operating profit in the 2021 fiscal year from a mine that has less than a gram per ton in an underground mine setting. So very, very significant. The all-in sustaining cost of Cadia was negative $109 per ounce. In other words, Newcrest produced 765,000 ounces of gold for free out of their Cadia operations. And obviously, very intriguing. How did they do that? What's this nature of that operation that leads to that incredible profitability? Well, one part of it is the incredible scale. It's a very large scale operation. And you can only get that kind of scale of mining operation from big deposits like porphyries. But this is a gold company, and it's a particular type of porphyry called an alkalic porphyry, which has a significantly higher gold grade than a typical porphyry. And so that kind of explains why they're interested in the Golden Triangle, because the deposits in the Golden Triangle are similar. They're like these. And in fact, many of the deposits are alkalic porphyries with very high gold credits. So that was a major revelation when I started digging into the Cadia and found the geological similarities to the Golden Triangle.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that Newcrest has invested so much money in Northwest British Columbia just to follow up on projects that have the same mineralization style as their Cadia project in Australia. But maybe we should step back a second and look at what porphyry systems are and what's distinguishing an alkalic porphyry. I guess porphyries are copper and gold deposits that are associated with magmatic intrusions and hydrothermal fluid pulses. But what makes these alkalic porphyries special?
Well, alkalic porphyries, by definition, contain a higher concentration of the alkalic metals, sodium and potassium. And look, without getting into a lot of geological detail and geochemistry and all the rest of it, the major significance appears to be that the alkalic porphyries are sourced deeper in the crust. So, you know, as you started to explain, the porphyries are related to magma that's related to a subduction zone where the oceanic crust is being pushed down under the continental crust. And the leading edge of that subducting plate is melting, rising to the surface, and the metals are being distributed out into the host rock. Not all the metals, of course, aluminum, iron, are incorporated into the rock-forming minerals, but metals like copper, gold, silver, that are not incorporated into the silicate minerals, are concentrated in the residual melt and get pushed out into the surrounding rocks. Now, the difference with the alkalic appears to be that they're sourced from deeper in the crust. And in fact, it looks like they incorporate a certain amount of subcrustal, that is upper mantle derived material, which has a much higher metal content. So that's part of it, the different chemistry, the different solubilities of the metal within the melt and all the rest of it. Add it all up, and the net effect is that there's some significantly higher ratio of gold to copper in an alkalic porphyry than in a classic, shall we say, porphyry. And for a gold company like Newcrest, that higher gold content is very, very important to them. So where do these alkalic porphyries occur? Well, the Lachlan Fold Belt of Australia, which is host to Cadia. There's two other areas, Didipio in Philippines and Skouries in Greece, which are not exactly favorable mining areas. And then the fourth one is the Golden Triangle of BC. So it's only natural that Newcrest ended up with a very significant involvement now in the Golden Triangle.
So what makes the Golden Triangle such a special host region for alkalic porphyries?
That is a paper yet to be written, and I'm sure it will be written many times over in the coming years. For now, as I mentioned earlier, the alkalic porphyries seem to be derived from magma that incorporates mantle-derived material. So this implies deeper subduction, crustal fractures that go deeper. We know in the Golden Triangle, we've got very deep-seated continental-scale fractures. The Eskay Rift is one example, and the incredibly rich Eskay Creek deposit related to that Eskay Rift feature. We've got a similar feature known as the Newmont Lake Graben, which is also related to some incredible mineralization. So there's something about the Golden Triangle that means that the magmatism is derived from deeper in the crust. It seems to incorporate this mantle material, has a much higher metal content. Huge deposits like the Sulphurets hydrothermal system, which is host to Seabridge's massive, massive KSM deposit. KSM, if you had the measured, indicated, and inferred, which we're not supposed to do, but just for illustrative purposes, 107 million ounces of gold within the KSM plus iron cap. Now, I don't know of anywhere else on the planet where you get that concentration of gold within such a small area. And then that same system continues on to the Tudor property, which hosts Treaty Creek, and they've just announced another 20 million ounces of gold resources on what's a continuation of that KSM trend. And then beside it, you've got Snowfield and Brucejack. So these deposits in the Golden Triangle are incredibly endowed with metals in general and with gold in particular. So it is truly a unique area on the planet for that incredible endowment of metals.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's like you said, it's the movement of the majors into the Golden Triangle that's really interesting, such as Newcrest's recent purchase of Pretium Resources. What can we learn from watching the movements of big companies like these as they move into new regions like the Golden Triangle? And what can the modern explorationists do about it?
Well, Teck, you know, one of the biggest mining companies in Canada, They've been involved in the Golden Triangle from the 1970s. Their early work up there was entirely focused on copper. Huge copper deposit that they had delineated. At the time, it was a remote location, and they kind of put it onto the back burner. In the 70s, they weren't looking for gold. A junior came along, reassayed the old drill core for gold, and they found there was 5 million ounces of gold in the deposit that Teck had delineated as a copper deposit. So Teck bought back their interest from the junior, and they've now put it in the front burner. Galore, again, discovered in the 60s, worked on through the 70s, and then put on the back burner. Two of the largest mining companies in the world explored it and then put it on the back burner. A junior company called NovaGold came along, re-evaluated it, and again, looked at the gold content. It's an alkalic porphyry. It has a high gold content, and showed it to be a major gold deposit. So Teck has an interest in that. And then Newmont bought out the interest of NovaGold. So Newmont bought a half interest in Galore. And then last year, Newmont bought the GT Gold, which had discovered the saddle deposit. So the majors are getting involved, but they're Teck, Newmont, and several of the other majors are dipping their toes in. But it was Newcrest that took the really big initiative. Newcrest now owns two of the two operating mines in the Golden Triangle. And the reason for that is their deep familiarity with the alkalic porphyry model, because that's what they're working with at Cadia.
So what can smaller companies look for to make a move into the Golden Triangle amongst all these major players?
Well, one fantastic recent example was Teuton. They staked the Treaty Creek property, and I believe it was in the 80s. And several companies looked at it, but it wasn't until Tudor came along, and then they hired Ken Konkin as their VPX, and they delineated the initial mineral resource from the Treaty Creek was over 20 million ounces of gold. Huge deposit, and they're only just beginning on that one. So that's one incredible success story that we've seen recently. Other companies are beginning to understand the significance of the alkalic model. And look, I don't want to turn this into a plug for Mountain Boy, but as an example of what can happen. So we were looking around the Golden Triangle at what's available. We saw this area that had been looked at going back to the 70s. In fact, Teck was up there looking at it in the 70s. A lot of work was done at that point looking for copper, following the classic porphyry copper, you know, zonation alteration model. And they looked at it and said, well, it's interesting, but it doesn't look like it's very big. And other companies came in and they looked at bits and pieces of it. So we've looked at it from a broader perspective. We pulled together information that was generated by literally 50 different companies that had worked on bits and pieces of that property. And we put together the broader picture, and we brought in the more recent thinking on porphyries, and including the alkalic model and some of the subtleties that distinguish the alkalic from other porphyries. We recognize that there's something here of real significance, and we assembled, it was five separate purchase agreements and some staking to put together a big property package that covers the entire hydrothermal mineralizing system. So just one example of the kind of thing that's happening in the triangle now, where new thinking is being applied to the results of work that's been going on up there for literally for decades, but bringing in new thinking. So we're pulling together a team of world-class experts that really understand porphyries in general, but in particular, the recent advances in understanding the alkalic model. And what we're seeing is, we're very excited about it. Let's just put it that way. We'll have a lot more news coming shortly, but it has all the hallmarks of another massive alkalic porphyry with a big gold credit and a lot of copper.
what I've seen coming out of the Mountain Boy project, especially the Telegraph property, is really, really interesting with multiple targets even within the property. Do you see multiple mineralization styles on the property?
Absolutely. It's clearly multiple phases of magnetism. We're trying to figure out, you know, the relationship between the minerals and the various stages. Now, we're just putting together a presentation now. And one of the things I just yesterday, for the first time, I put the KSM beside our DOC through DOC X trend. And it's really, really impressive to see how KSM stands up against our DOC trend in that huge deposit that Seabridge has outlined, and on the same scale as our deposit. And you can see the periodicity, and that's something that Ken Konkin of Tudor talks about, is the periodicity of the mineralizing centers within these big hydrothermal systems. So as I say, it was literally just yesterday where I put the two on the same scale and went, wow, this looks so much like it in terms of the mineralizing centers. Now look, we're very early stage. In fact, we've got a grand total of two drill holes on our 6 or 8 kilometer long trend. But you can see from the geochemistry and the geophysics that you've got what appears to be multiple centers. And then you go 8 kilometers further east, and we've got a completely separate system that we call Yeti. So multiple targets within this big property position that we've now put together.
Yeah, that's really exciting, Lawrence. You'd know better than anybody, but all of the world-class porphyry systems are formed from multiple pulses of magma and multiple pulses of fluid flow, which results in different styles of mineralization, but often located on, like you mentioned, a single trend. And it's really interesting then that when you overlay a world-class system like KSM on your deposit, that it shows striking similarity, both in terms of the style of pulses, the style of mineralization.
Well, Aaron, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Ours is way, way, way earlier stage than KSM, obviously. And the only point I was trying to make there is the scale of the footprint of the potential mineralizing system appears to be on a similar scale. We've got a lot of work yet to do in terms of relating the pulses to the mineralization and all of that sort of detail, which we are working on now. Even during this quiet period over the winter, we've got a team of experts that are doing some very advanced scientific work and analytical work on samples that were collected from the last field season, but also going back to samples that were collected over decades and from the two drill holes that were drilled in 2014.
Sure. And I guess a lot of times it's these soil anomalies and geophysical surveys that kind of outline potential hydrothermal centers where you have mineralization styles.
Well, that's right. But way beyond just soil geochem, we're taking samples, for example, from the drill core. And we're using a technique called shortwave infrared, SWIR, which is a means of detecting subtleties in clay alteration. So, you know, geologists can look at the alteration and at a high level differentiate the different phases of alteration. But using a technique like SWIR, they can get a lot more detailed. And it's those subtleties in the alteration halos that are really significant in terms of vectoring toward the mineralizing center. And that's the kind of work that we're doing right now. Trace element geochemistry, looking at cobalt, for example, platinum, palladium. And we're talking concentrations in parts per billion, nothing even suggesting economic viability. But for example, the presence of palladium in a porphyry has been associated with larger scale and with the alkalic model, suggesting that deeper, you know, mantle related magma. So it's those kind of subtleties that we've got a team of experts working on it at this moment.
I like the subtlety, and I like making discoveries and looking for the things that we didn't know were there, particularly if it comes to geochemistry and high quality geoscience. I guess one of the last things I want to ask you is, what can we observe and what can we learn from patterns when we see big companies and mid-sized companies making big moves in areas like BC's Golden Triangle?
Number one thing for any junior is, okay, the Golden Triangle, it's been on mining industry radar for many years now, getting more and more intense. But it was when Newcrest made that $3 billion commitment to take over Pretium. I think that was a major signal. That was a turning point in the way that the mining industry sees the Golden Triangle. It's no longer early stage, too remote, all these things. They're now recognizing we've got road access all through the district. We've got cheap hydropower produced in the heart of the district that's being exported to the rest of the province, let alone available for mines in the district. All the infrastructure is there. And that wasn't the case a couple decades ago when a lot of this earlier work was done. And the other thing that's really important, so now that it's recognized, the majors are coming in. Newmont is already there. They've made two big investments over the last few years, and there'll be a lot more. But the other thing that the juniors have to really be conscious of is whatever they're looking for, it has to have the potential to be large enough to attract the attention of a Newcrest or a Newmont or a Teck or the other companies that are looking to get involved up there. And it's hard to differentiate because, look, when we first looked at Telegraph, it looked like a bunch of small occurrences. But that was the case with all of our projects. The work that was done up there in earlier years was done mostly by juniors and going in chasing a showing. So a prospector would have found gold sticking out of the ground somewhere. The juniors flock in, they trample all around that outcrop, take a bunch more samples and say, yeah, it looks interesting, but it's not very big. Well, right next to them is another junior doing the same thing, and they're not talking to one another. So we've pulled together all these reports, and what looks like small occurrences are really different aspects of much larger geological systems. So, you know, just a note to the juniors that are looking to get involved in the area, make sure that whatever you're looking at has the potential to be large enough to attract the attention of the largest mining companies. Now that can include the intermediates, you know, companies like Agnico, Yamana, Kinross that are emerging into the major category. Those companies are keenly interested. Hecla has a huge presence up there. Coeur is involved just north of the Golden Triangle.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Sue. I think there's a lot of room for new geologists, new ideas, like you mentioned, but also this idea of data sharing or data communication, where you're looking at historical data, you're looking at modern data, and you're looking at who's around to help you collect and make the best decisions geologically for what's going on at these properties. Rather than taking a surface expression of gold and saying, oh, it's not that big, some of these porphyry systems can be quite large. For example, even at your Telegraph property is quite a large plot of land. And it's really up to the exploration teams then to discern, differentiate, and communicate what they're finding to the public and also to each other.
And just to add to that, Mountain Boy has entered into a formal agreement with another junior looking at a similar geological setting where we have formally agreed that we will share all of our information on a confidential basis and our geos will talk to one another so that if geo on one project figures something out, then the other company will learn about that so we can both build on that emerging geological understanding.
That sounds like an amazing idea that I wish more companies were engaging in. It's one of the most difficult things about being a geologist or an exploration company. I wish more companies were doing that, Lawrence. All right, well, that's about all the time we have for today. Lawrence, do you have any other final comments?
Well, just to say, to really reiterate here, this is a fantastic idea that you're looking, you know, beyond the headlines and looking for things that are not in the general media kind of approach to educating investors.
Yeah, we're happy to be part of this. And I think sometimes sitting down and having a conversation, even if it's online, is still a better way to get this information across. Lawrence, I just want to say thanks again for being on the Unknown Mining Podcast.
Thanks a lot, Aaron. Look forward to talking again.
And we look forward to hearing new news coming out of the Golden Triangle and Mountain Boy Minerals project at Telegraph Property. And as always, keep exploring the unknown.